Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Did you buy anything this morning?
I did. I ordered an iPhone, not without problems, but I got
What happened? What happened? I awoke at 7 a.m. Pacific time.
Leisurely 7 a.m.
And saw that apparently the Apple Card was, in many cases, unable to process an order for new Apple hardware, which is a bad thing.
Because if only Apple could control the entire widget, you know, the entire experience. It wasn't even I didn't even have an Apple Pay option, which surprises me about the upgrade program. Like, it presented me, you know, I did this sort of, they have a pre-flight thing where you can go through and go accept all the terms and all that stuff beforehand. And I have obviously existing loan because of my iPhone 12, which is all set up on the Apple Card just fine. And so you'd figure you'd just be able to breeze through and check out and go, except when I hit place order, it's like, oh, we can't, your card's not going through. First, it made me fill in the number. It didn't have the number for my Apple Card. And I was like, well, that's weird. It had like the expiration date and the security code, but not the number. It's like, okay, that's strange. Fortunately, it's now easier, I think, as of the iOS 15 beta, to like go in and get your number. So I was like, fine, I'll just go copy it. So I got copied and pasted it in. It's like, no, we can't take this card. What? So I went in, placed it again. No. At that point, I decided, you know what? I'm not going to screw around here. And I went and grabbed one of my other cards and put that in, and that went through just fine. So I mentioned it on Twitter. I got a ton of replies. And of course, now there's been several blog posts elsewhere about this, but it's unclear, at least the last I looked, whether it was specifically Apple Card or MasterCard or what. But as I remarked to you just before we started recording here, I was trying to order lunch and pay for it with Apple Pay. I tried to use my Apple Card, as I often do, and it did not work. So it seems like there is a larger problem here.
Yeah.
But maybe they... And it's always with these launch day things, pre-order days, maybe they just failed to anticipate demand or something else was going on. I don't know.
I don't know. The iPhone is what does it. We were just we streamed on Tuesday after the event, upgrade live. I know you were doing the rebound too. I don't know if you looked at
Jason. I have the same numbers. I can see both numbers, live stream numbers.
Yeah,
and
you're
it's
right.
Very depressing. So let me tell you,
because there were
1,000 people on your live stream, and there were 10 on ours.
So this is what happens when we started doing this post WWDC thing. I think we had. When we were doing it in like a hotel room in San Jose, I think we had like a server that maxed out at 256 or 255, and it was not we hit the limit, and so we changed servers and increased the limit and all that. And on Tuesday after the event, we changed the server to a much beefier server because the server was falling down, serving all of those listeners. And I thought that was interesting that we quadrupled the capacity at least, and then you give it a few years. But when it falls down is not like on WWDC. It's for the iPhone event. It's always for the iPhone event.
Right.
And so, we did really well at WWDC. I think we had more than 1,000 live stream listeners then, too.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
But this time we just, like that script that you and I both have that shows you the live numbers, it stopped working. And people were still listening, but that was not my first hint that something was wrong, and that because the server seemed to be refusing connections, because that our little script hits an XML file and says, what are your stats? And that that file was not being served by the live server. Mm-hmm. That was a really good sign that something bad was going on. Good, but also bad.
Did you intentionally simulcast that to the Incomparables live stream too?
I did end up turning on the Incomparables live stream and putting that in the Relay Discord and whatever 8 people listened to over there. But I was just trying to create an outlet for people who were desperate to listen who had lost the feed.
As many people on your backup server as were on our main stream. So, you know.
But it was my point being that the iPhone demand is always the peak, right?
Always
so,
high.
Like, I'm not surprised that their payment system broke for the iPhone, because it's all about the iPhone, right? We talk about it being a certain percentage of Apple's business. It's all about the iPhone.
Right. And it's interesting because it was like, I was on at 8 a.m. Eastern and I was refreshing the Apple Store and all that. So it's not as though, you know, it went down after 5 minutes, right? Or 10 minutes of like, oh, we're inundated. It was down immediately, pretty much. So right. Who knows? Something hit it. Or maybe they decided unwisely, like, oh, we should do some maintenance before this. You know,
it's got to be.
Never do maintenance right before it.
It's got to be that the whole payment infrastructure that's running behind the Apple Card was not anticipating that level of demand in such a spike. And that's dumb. I guess they've perhaps learned that lesson now. But yeah. Well, so what'd you get?
So I ordered a 128 gig Pro in Sierra Blue. Which is basically the exact same phone I have now. I went down to 128 last year because I had a 256/11, and that was because there was, I think those were the only options at the time. You could get like 64 or 256. I'm like, 64, too small, 256, probably more than I need. And when they added 128 last year, it's like, oh, that's actually the perfect size for me. I don't keep enough on my phone that it's an issue, and it saved me a little bit of money.
Now it's the base model.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll take that.
It's for all the grief we give Apple about the five gigabyte iCloud backup freebie thing, I'm gonna give them some applause. Going to based 128 is really good. Good for them.
Yeah, yeah. No, it feels like a very comfortable amount. I'm sure I would outgrow it eventually, but it's been pretty stable in the last year or two. I haven't really worried too much about it. I did actually run out of iCloud storage space. Which I didn't realize for a while until I noticed I had that note saying, we couldn't back up your iPhone. I was like, what? So I had to upgrade finally from my 200 gigabytes to the 2 terabyte plan. Yeah. I switched to the bundle finally.
Yeah.
That was what got me. Yep. So there you go. Yeah. But so you didn't, I'm assuming by your 7 a.m. Pacific wake up time, you did not order anything.
I thought about it because I am going to buy a phone this cycle. But I am going to presumably do the review thing again. Like, Apple is very nice and puts me in their review program. I'm not in the secret, double secret embargo file, which if I were, I couldn't tell you, right? But I can tell you I'm not. Right. So I'm not going to be, you know, posting a surprise review next week ever because I've secretly had the phones all this time. That's not the case. But I do think I am on their review program and will be getting phones to review sometime, maybe next week. And so I'm going to, you know how some people wait for reviews before buying phones, not the people who are up at 5 a.m. Pacific, but
not those
people. Some people, the rest of the people. Anyway, I thought, well, I'm literally going to write the review, so perhaps I should wait for my review before I decide. I really want to see the promotion display. I mean, I know I've got it on my iPad, but I want to see it on the phone, and I really want to kind of gauge the difference between the Pro phone and the Mini, because I have predominantly been using a Mini for the last year, and I really like it. And so I guess the question is going to come down to, do I want to use the Mini, or do I want to use the Pro that's got the better camera and has got the promotion? Right. I guess, honestly, what will give me the most pause is that we generally hand down our phones. There's some laundry going back. Classic Sellers podcast.
I'm enjoying the ambiance.
The laundry that's going. We went out for as an aside, we went out for Lauren's birthday and had breakfast at a breakfast place, an all-day breakfast place, basically. And Jamie was ready to dig into her blueberry-covered crepe and put her elbow right in. the blueberry and stuff, and so we're washing the
emergency laundry.
There's a laundry load going. It's going to try to clean. Like, it's her favorite sweatshirt, which is one of mine, but she's stolen most of my sweatshirts now. anyway, where was I? I don't even. Oh yeah, we do hand-me-downs. So like, Julian's got Lauren's old phone, and Lauren's got my old phone, and I don't know if I want to inflict a Mini on people. So for this one, I might actually buy a bigger phone just because I don't want to inflict a smaller phone as a hand-me-down. So we'll see.
We shall see.
I don't know, but it is time for that. I can put it off though, because I've got the review units and all of that. I'm in the very fortunate position of being able to put off my purchase for a little while, so I'll wait on that. The one that I really want to buy is the Apple Watch, which of course I can't buy.
That's an interesting. It was since we haven't gotten to chat since the event on Tuesday.
Yeah, wow, it's all just a blur.
Yeah, off in our own little bubbles, always.
So much going on.
Yeah. It's interesting. I had that moment of, once again, feeling like I'm on the upgrade program treadmill. So in some ways, I should just get a new phone. But at the same time, being like, I was not wowed, I guess, is my feeling. It's not to say anything was like bad or whatever. I just wasn't like, there wasn't for me that one feature that was like, oh, yeah. That's what I really want this phone for. And it funny, the thing that had gotten me the most excited in this run-up, and I know you and Mike discussed it too, and I think you had it in the draft, was that idea of an always-on screen. I was right. Like, oh, yeah, that's something kind of cool and new, and like I think I would get something out of that. And I was waiting for it during the event.
Nope.
Didn't happen. So I was like, all right, well, I mean, there's good camera upgrades, and that's nice, but the promotion is nice.
The bigger zoom lens and
that's probably...
are about and better battery life, but that's about it.
The battery life is nice. Yeah, ProMotion even. I have it on my iPad Pro, and it's funny to say that because Lex Friedman made fun of me when I said, "Oh, look, it's got a fancy iPad." And Lex's iPad is 4 years old. Like this technology is not new, and it's a great looking iPad. I have no complaints about that. But if you pressed me to see, like, I guess what the difference is, I'm sure I could get it if I stared at it for a while, but it doesn't feel like something that's in your face. So it's, I don't know. We'll see. You know,
it's nice and smooth, but agree. It's potentially esoteric. Well, most people are not and should not update their phone every year.
Despite Apple's encouragement with that upgrade program in some ways.
If you kept your existing phone, would you end up like stop not making monthly payments? Can you get off the...
Yeah, you just keep paying. You just keep paying on the existing loan, and you pay it off.
And you pay it off, and then it's gone.
Yeah, and then you can sell it or do whatever you want with
it. Instead, they essentially convert it into a trade-in.
Exactly. And so you end up paying half-ish the price of a phone for essentially leasing a phone for a year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know... how the math, like, I don't want to do the math because I mean, you don't know exactly, right? Because if you got a trade in value and you sold it later, you might get a better value, or you could hand it down if you've got somebody to hand it down to.
You get an understandable amount that you're paying every month for a year, and you get a new phone every year, and you don't have to worry about it. I mean, that's
exactly it's a subscription program, sort of, right? Like, it feels like that. Yep. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm just paying my $50 a month or whatever for my phone and Apple Care, and there you go.
No, it makes sense.
Yeah, it has a lot of logic to it, and especially as someone who does tend to write about these features, it's nice to have it on the phone on hand. So, you know, at the moment, it still makes sense, but it does feel like, are we getting to a point, and you wrote about this a little bit with the processor, like, are returns diminishing? Is there a point at which it's like, well, maybe I switch to an every 2 years or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, some years are especially incremental, but most years are incremental, and you just, you get value in it by... I'm working on something. I've shown it to you where I'm trying to like map out the changes. And like, if you wait 3 or 4 years, there are lots of changes. But if it's every year, the changes are often very small. Sometimes they're big, but often they're very small in those years. This is one of those years where, you know, I don't think it's a problem. I saw a piece yesterday. I forget who wrote it. I'm not going to throw them under the bus anyway, but it was very much like, oh, the problem with the iPhone event is that it's just fine, and you don't need a new iPhone every year. And it's like, I really wish people would stop breathlessly writing, you don't need a new iPhone every year, like it's like everybody's buying a new iPhone every year. Right. And this is the only sane person in the world saying, stop, you don't need to do it. It's been very clear for a very long time. And most people don't. And most people have never, because originally it was the 2-year contract, right? Like, it's not... You know, most people don't buy a new iPhone every year. They shouldn't buy a new iPhone every year. For most people, you should wait 2, 3, 4 years, and then it makes it, especially with the prices of phones now, it makes it much more reasonable. If you are treating yourself and you get a new iPhone every year because you're a Six Colors member and you love this stuff, that's fine. But like, I'm talking about general like consumer world out there. People don't do that, and they don't need to, and it's fine. And that's not a shocker. That's Apple's whole game, is that they know that they've got people on 2-, 3-, 4-year cycles, and for them, the difference between the two is much more impressive. Like, the battery life gain, if you're coming from a 10, sure, is enormous, because they made a lot of battery life strides last year and more this year. And so that's a good example where you're going to get just a huge amount of battery life gain, plus a whole bunch of other features. But from year to year, yeah, it's, this is just what it is.
I mean, my wife's still on an 8, I think. Wow. So, yeah, I mean, and her work phone is, I think, a 6S. Ooh. It's like, they better replace that at some point. But, you know, she is not certainly on an every other year, even upgrade cycle. Yeah. I have other people who are. One of my cousins was texting me last night, because she's like, "Oh, it's iPhone Day tomorrow. Are you excited?" Because we're, and she's also on the upgrade plan. So every year good morning. What are you getting? So we got, I think we got the same one this year. We both got the Pro 128 in blue. It's most people certainly not doing that every year. I think the watch is an interesting counterpoint, and I know you talked about this before, and I've talked about this before too. Like the watch upgrade cycle, right? For a little while, right, when it first started, it felt like, well, maybe Apple isn't envisioning this as a rev every year product. But of course, they have now settled into a rev every year routine on it. And I don't think most people tend to buy a new watch every year.
No, not at all. Even less than the iPhone, I would think.
And I will say, for me, like personally, I find myself on the fence this year with the 7. I have a 4, a Series 4, which is still a really solid watch. Mm. Like, I don't really have a lot of complaints with it. I think if there were a single feature I would like to see, it's the always on.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a 5, and so I do have the always on, and that was my motivator to get it, and I've been very happy with it. I am planning on buying a 7, so what's the difference there? I don't know. The always on is brighter.
Bigger screen
is really something that appeals to me. I use my Apple Watch all the time, because I use it.
Yep.
I wear it all the time, and I also use it when I'm running and exercising, and I play podcasts on it to my AirPods while I'm running. I mean, like, I really do put it to use, and I have a cellular model, so I go out of the house without a phone a lot, because I know that I've got my little computer on my wrist. So, you know, a lot of things about it that I really like. And so I think that that's going to be, I'm legitimately excited about getting a new one, because I haven't bought one in 2 years. And then I will probably roll this one down to Julian. But it's okay. Like, this is the thing. I think some people are struggling with the sort of idea of, like, there's a new, it's come up before, the idea that sometimes people get really mad or upset or have conflicting feelings of some kind about the fact that Apple made a product announcement and they don't want to buy it right away.
Right.
And it's like, it's okay. Right. It's okay. In fact, in many cases, it works as intended, that they don't actually intend for everybody to buy one every year. They really do expect that there is a buying cycle for this stuff. And that's okay. It's okay if Apple makes a product that doesn't appeal to you. And I do think people struggle with it sometimes, especially if they're used to getting whatever kind of fun or, you know, it's just like a little exciting moment of making your iPhone purchase. And like, I get it that if it's not there this year, you're like, oh, that's too bad. But it's okay. Like, it's okay if it's every other year or every third year or really when the moment strikes, whether it's a new addition that is a feature you absolutely must have, or whether it's that you broke your phone.
Your phone gives up the ghost. Yeah, exactly. Right?
Like, either one of those. There's a moment in this week's Ted Lasso, no major spoilers, but there's a moment where an iPhone battery dies. And I was like, wow, I can't believe Apple allowed them to put... Boy, Ted Lasso really has got... They're made with Apple. Apple can't touch them now, because they had a plot point where an iPhone runs out of battery.
Like, you can either not be an iPhone, or the iPhone can run out of battery. Those are your choices.
Yeah, those are your choices. This character has to have an Android phone all of a sudden for one scene where that happens. And not
I think, the upgrade cycles are interesting too, because I know I'm thinking of my parents, right, too, who have iPhones. My dad doesn't use his very often. I think he's on a 6S maybe, and my mom's on a first gen SE, which I got to replace her 5S.
Yeah.
She loves that size. And I was like, well, maybe I should get her a mini because like it's the last, if it's the last, everyone's panicking about the mini.
Yeah.
If it's the last one, then, you know.
You know, they're still selling the 12 mini, right? Like for cheap. So maybe that's what you should get for
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a good idea.
And, the, and with, I think that it's, with more colors.
Right, and it's only slightly bigger, right? So I can kind of get it in, you know, and convince her that it's not, like, humongous like some of the other phones. It's still bigger than the 5S SE case.
Well, but, and that screen is way bigger, right? That's one of the nice things about it is you get the sort of edge-to-edge screen with a notch design in a very compact phone. So I love it. You know, I love the Mini. I'll be sad if it goes away. For sure. The colors. Okay. Let's talk about colors.
Let's talk about colors.
You know, I could talk about the A15 processor and, you know, I wrote about that. And, you know, suffice it to say that Apple's being squirrely about processor speed comparisons, which I think is weird. But now it's come out in the last few days. It sounds like the A15 probably is a little bit faster than the A14, which is good. Maybe even in line with the progress they've made over the years. And it sounds like they've decided that it makes them look better to compare it to the competition. And it's not as much about hiding the difference between the 14 and the 15 as pointing out that there's an even larger difference between the 15 and Android, which is true because Apple's been way ahead of the Qualcomm processors for a while now. And that the iPad mini appears to be underclocked. Which is, there's a whole sidebar about Apple's chip strategy here because they've got, they seem to have built the A15, but are binning it in a few different ways. The idea that you're taking a different the same processor and underclocking it for one system and disabling a GPU on another system because the iPhone 13s are non-pro, only have 4 GPUs enabled, but the 15s have 5 GPUs enabled. And so Apple's diversifying like that. This one chip is behaving differently in different systems, which is kind of interesting. But no, let's talk about Starlight and Midnight and the fact that the new iPhone 13s only come in 4 colors instead of 6. And like it's just interesting to me the choices that Apple is making on the color front as they ramp up these iMacs that have all of these different colors. Here's a case where the iPhone 13 doesn't have as many color options. You know, if you really like the purple and you were thinking about buying a purple iPhone 12 and thought, well, maybe I'll wait for the 13. Like, there's no purple iPhone 13. It doesn't exist. Right. And then silver has been replaced by Starlight.
Right. Yeah. It's tricky because like once you, I mean, and Apple did this even years ago, right? With the iMacs, right? They had a color lineup and then the colors would change from like generation to generation. And I understand why, like you want to introduce new colors and sort of get people excited about them. But it's tough if you're like, you know, I was talking, as I mentioned, talking to my cousin and she's like, yeah, I got the blue. I'm kind of missing the green one from the 11, you know? Yeah. And I was like, yeah, I hear you. Like, you know, there's different shades and by switching it out every year, I feel like I'm forced to become less precious about it and just be like, you know what? I'm going to get whatever color I end up getting, you know, and choose sort of what the best option is. And for the iPhone Pros over the last several years, I've pretty much always ended up going with the different color, right?
There's the midnight blue or the forest green.
Yeah, because I've had plenty
green,
of silver.
Yeah,
I've had plenty of, I usually have black. Most of mine have been black. I've had the silver or white a couple times. Gold is not my thing. And I will just, you know, take a pass on that. And so I usually end up with whatever the odd color out is. And it's been blue this year and last year. And it was green the year before that. And that's fine. I mean, both the blue last year and the green before that were extremely subtle on the Pro, right? Like to the point of you kind of forget sometimes, especially if you have it in a case.
Dark,
like,
a very dark color with a very subtle color sheen on it, color cast on it to make it sort of very dark green or very dark blue.
It is weird, though, to have this choice of, and I think, again, you and Mike talked about this, and Mike pointed out, like, some of them are colors and some of them are not, which is weird. Uh-huh. And I guess I don't entirely understand where they're going with that. To me, it's like, stick with easy colors, even if you want to give them different names. Like, go with, like, the fruit themes, right, back in the day, the blueberry and the lime and tangerine and all that. Like, all right, fine, that's cute. Well,
on one level, I want to give them maybe a little bit of credit because they seem to be trying trying to start defining a color palette. The problem is they haven't really done a good job of it yet, because my frustration was always like, what is space gray? And the answer is it's a bunch of different shades of gray that are not the same. And they call it that. But now they have like, and they've had for a little while now, there's like the is it the stainless watch is space black?
Yeah, right. Because it's darker than the aluminum space gray.
What's that? And now they have midnight, which seems like it's a very,
it's
very,
blue.
Very dark. Right. Dark gray with a blue tint to it. And then Starlight, to answer everybody's question, Starlight is kind of like Apple's default silver with more of a yellow cast. Or you could maybe even argue that the default silver was more blue, and they're now making it more yellow. So it's not gold. It's, in fact, I would say that if you saw it out of context, my guess is you wouldn't notice, but we'll see.
Right.
We'll see. It does, in all the photography on the web, it does not look like blingy, like the gold or like the rose gold.
Right. It's a champagne-y almost.
Almost. It is
color.
It is the most dilute gold as far as we can tell from the images. And yeah, everybody's doing their Kremlinology where they download all the images and put them up against each other and all that. Mm-hmm. But you know, I have been told by people who know and are authorized to speak off the record, I don't even know how to phrase it, people I can't name or even say who they are, but you could guess, that it is a silver with a little bit more of the gold coloring put into it. So think of it as a slightly yellower silver. I would bet you that if you saw one out of context, I'm colorblind, so I might be missing some of that yellow, but like I bet you'd be hard pressed to notice. But it's interesting that they're doing that, and I don't know like what the motivation is there, but it feels to me like Apple's decided that that's going to be, here's a prediction, which is that that's going to be their silver from now on is Starlight. And that,
well,
like,
at least for
the next
year or two.
Well, maybe we'll so see. maybe they'll change it over time, but my guess is that they're starting to have a more coherent color strategy, and that Starlight, since we saw it in a bunch of places, like I would imagine the next MacBook Air, let's say, will come in Starlight.
Right.
There are rumors that it will also have colors, but like I imagine that instead of having the silver option, all of my mockery of the iMac having, you know, six colors and then the silver one, which is not a color because it's boring, it's like, oh no, now it's going to be Starlight. And I think that's what's going to happen. That would be my prediction, is that Apple is going to clear out all of its default, uninspiring, just give me a computer that isn't of a flashy color devices are all going to be Starlight as the default. That's going to be my guess.
Interesting.
And
It will be interesting to see when the, you know, those larger iMacs eventually run out, come out, and the MacBook Pros come out, because we've also seen this with the iPhones, this Pro sort of standard line disparity in terms of which ones get the colors. And, you know, are those larger ones only going to be in Starlight and Graphite in one other color, or are they going to be in Midnight? I don't know. There's Midnight and there's Graphite and there's, oh boy. I don't know.
Or that blue. I mean, the funny thing about that blue is that it's not a bright blue, but it's a light blue.
I showed it to my wife and she's like, yeah, we should get you a tuxedo to go with that. it's a little powder blue,
It is.
We'll see
the San Diego Chargers phone. There it is.
Well, I had the same dilemma looking at the watch, because if I was going to get a Series 7, looking at the colors on that too, I felt like, well, I do love green. My biggest concern with green is always, will it go with anything, you know, or will it always sort of stand out too much? And there isn't really, in the aluminum, there isn't, as you said, with the Starlight and the Midnight, there's not really those silver and gray options anymore. And I don't think the Midnight, I think, is a little too blue for me, and the Starlight is not my color. So I feel like I'm down to blue or green at that point if I want an aluminum watch, or I have to go up to one of the fancier ones.
Yeah, it's interesting to see. So it's still a mess, but I'm gonna at least hold out a little hope that Apple is naming these colors what they are, because they're trying to get their act together. It may be a while before they get their act together, but I would like Apple to get to a place. When I say that, what I mean is I'd like to get to Apple to get to a place where when they use a term for a color, that color is consistent across products.
Across the lines, sure.
So there's only one space gray, or they retire space gray. There's only one space black. There's only one midnight. There's only one starlight, right? And I would like that. Now, yeah, they can have like the Sierra Blue is not blue, right? It's Sierra Blue,
right?
Which means that if they use that color again, they'll call it Sierra Blue, and if they use a different blue, they'll call it a different blue. And like, sure. Eventually, you want to get there, because what you don't want is to have, oh, I got this in orange and this in orange, and they're totally
they
different
match.
Oranges.
Yeah.
Like that's right. Not like the cover I have for my iPad is electric orange, right? And it's like I have that on my my watch band too is an electric orange, and they match. And they've done another orange that's different, right? There's for sports mm-hmm. fans out there, there's San Francisco Giants orange, there's University of Texas orange, there's University of Tennessee orange. Like there are a bunch of different oranges out there, and so define them that way. Don't just say, yeah, it's orange, it's an orange, whatever. Like
right.
So I'm hoping that they will. Because some people care about this stuff. Like, be clearer about it. Because for a long time, space gray has literally been whatever. Just
right,
whatever.
Right. It's yeah. And I mean, you know, and you have to have some differences in materials too, right? Like
of
the
course.
Stuff that you do in like your fluoroelastomer or your cover for your iPad, you can't match what you're doing in an anodized aluminum,
exactly.
Right? It just doesn't work. But you can, you know, you can be consistent within materials. So as long as
yeah.
you've got like an aluminum, you know,
yeah, the
device.
Orange, the orange yeah. iMac doesn't look like my orange iPad cover, right?
Right.
They're
right.
Not,
which
they're
is
not
fine.
Because that's electric orange and that's, you know, orange iMac color, I guess, is what that is. Tang. anyway, lots of talk about color, but I do think that, you know, what we're seeing is that Apple increasingly cares about color. The iMac was the giveaway there, right? Like colored Macs again, and the rumors about the MacBook Air are the same, right? That they're gonna provide colors. But yeah, I would lay some odds that it may be the iMac colors, but I would not be surprised if silver is replaced with starlight, because that
starlight.
Seems to be their new preference there. But it'll be interesting to see how it goes too. Like I saw so many people say that they ordered the blue iPhone, and I wonder what mm-hmm, that. Mm-hmm. I wonder if they do a new kind of accent color for the iPhone every year, expecting that it will get a certain percentage out of novelty. And I wonder if some yep. of them go better and some of them go worse, mm. And then sometimes they midstream drop another color in there. Remember when
right,
they did the purple?
The product, yeah, right, right,
the product
right,
red
right.
launched with it
done
this
the
time.
Reds. This time it does. In the past, it's come out later
yeah.
for some of the lines. But yeah, the purple, that was interesting.
That was where we were like press release saying, now there's a purple phone. I'm like,
yeah, we weren't
what?
Ready. The purple
what?
Wasn't ready. We were finalizing our
the
colors.
World, no, Dan. The world wasn't ready for the purple
the world
iPhone.
Wasn't ready for it. That's right. Nobody could handle
they
it.
They weren't ready. They just,
yeah.
Our minds blown. You have an eSIM update, which I thought was
oh,
nice.
Yeah. I'm very excited for two things. One, the 13 has support for dual eSIMs for the first time. So
wild.
You used to be able to have one eSIM and one physical SIM. And I did for a long time because I had a complimentary phone plan thing through a sponsor, and I was using that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I had my AT&T on an eSIM.
Yeah.
And it was fine. But now it has moved to dual eSIM and also the upgrade program phone. And I believe most of the other phones that you can get ship without physical SIMs and ship with eSIMs instead, which I think is probably, as somebody commented, I think Six Colors Lack, like Apple has probably been trying to kill the SIM card for a super long time because
yeah.
they don't, it's a moving part. It's a place where dust can get in. It's finicky. It's
right.
weird and technological, and it mars the surface. So if they can get rid of it, they will. So I think it'll be a couple more years before it bites the dust, but it's on its way.
Yeah, you get the infrastructure in place. I'm somebody who uses a SIM card because I review phones, and it's very mm-hmm. nice to be able to pop my SIM card into all the different phones and then use them. Right, that's nice.
Sure, yeah.
But I also see that that is not a mainstream application of it.
So many over the years from traveling and stuff like that, and I have to say the idea of just being able to like buy a card and scan a QR code on it and be like, here's your cell phone service. Or in the case of
yeah.
T-Mobile was doing a thing where you could download an app and just be like, you want to try T-Mobile? Download this app. And hit a button in the app, and it will activate an eSIM. And I'm like, that's bananas. I love
that. Great,
right? That's what I want. I want that because I have been in so many airports and train stations trying to like poke out the SIM card and trying to swap them over. Yeah. You're just like, this is so dumb. Yeah. Why is there not a better way of doing this?
It is. And I would imagine that once that infrastructure is in place, then the tools around it will also be a lot better. So like if I wanted to review a phone and I had my AT&T service, there probably would be a fairly easy way, who knows, it's AT&T, to transfer my eSIM from phone one to phone two. And have it be okay, but who knows? I don't know. But it's good that they're going in that direction. Having a physical piece of plastic that you have to insert in order to use your phone is
weird.
It feels real old at this point.
And as I think I discussed a couple of years ago when I first tried to transfer a physical SIM to an eSIM, like, it was a nightmare. Like, I had to go to multiple AT&T stores, and some of them were like, yeah, we don't know what you're talking about. And some finally, like, oh, you can do it, but you can't do it at this store. You got to go to this store. And literally, I get down there, and it's like scanning a barcode. And you're like, why do I have to go to a store at all? And B, why do I have to go to three stores? And then during the pandemic last year, it actually improved to the point you could just talk to a customer service representative on, like, their virtual chat or whatever, and they would do it for you.
Yeah.
And then this year it's like automatic, and I was like, yes, that is great. That is the way it should go. Get better every time.
We haven't even talked about the iPad mini.
No.
Which is coming out next week, so I'm sure we'll have more to say perhaps, because there will be reviews and stuff out then. But it was great to see that update. It looks really great. Like, the idea that they basically took an iPad Air and put it in the iPad mini size. And, you know, it's not for everybody, but I like that Apple talked about the use cases, and I like that Apple is still updating this product and still find. I mean, it's not a product that needs to be updated every year, but every two and a half years, it has value. It's good for kids. It's good for people with good eyesight. And it also is kind of like a really, really, really big phone, if you think about it that way. So... I was really happy to see that, and it looks fantastic, right? Just I love that design, that started on the iPad Pro, moved to the iPad Air, and is now to the iPad Mini. It makes that new ninth generation iPad look real old, but you know, that's what you get for buying the low end one, is they're not going to put the highest high tech in there. So that's a product that seemed to be universally acclaimed coming out of Tuesday's event, was the new iPad Mini.
Yeah, it looks really good. I think this transition over to sort of the modern look and feel, with the iPad is really positive. It is the thing that makes me feel like I'm still sitting here on my 10.5 inch iPad Pro that has Touch ID and all that on the home button and all that. And I definitely covet the new ones. I'm like, but I don't know. Like, I think the iPad Mini is I had a Mini once. I think I had the second one, and it was really great for the time. But I eventually could not avoid the siren song of the larger screen again.
Yeah, same.
But, you know, I think I tweeted on Tuesday when they announced it. It's got serious, like, pad from Star Trek vibes.
Oh, yeah.
The little handheld thing with no... Yeah,
oh, yeah,
super
Captain
cool.
Picard needs immediately ordered
stack
eight
of them. Yeah,
to
exactly.
put on his desk, one for each report, from each group. Yeah,
that's how it works.
It's... So I was looking at it and thinking, one of the things that I'm going to need to do as this product ships is write about the like what I would recommend for a keyboard. And the truth is, I'm sure somebody will make a keyboard for it, but it's so small that there's no way that keyboard's going to be any good. So I feel like the right solution here is you need to get a nice, small, light Bluetooth keyboard and a little stand for the iPad. And if you want to write on that iPad, that's how you should do it, is Bluetooth and a stand.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I mean, and it's frustrating because it means two things to carry around with you, which is a bummer, but it really, you're not going to get a good experience typing on
case. Throw in a trackpad or a Bluetooth mouse if you want to. You can do that too.
Right? Yeah.
But like that I feel like is the way to do it. And and you can have, and so there are some of those cases that you fold back and it sort of makes its own stand. That would be a good choice for something like this. I think there are even some keyboards that do that have like a little ridge in the back. And like that's the kind of right thing. I think you don't want to make this thing into a little laptop. That seems to be probably a mistake. I was looking
netbook, Jason.
Yeah. Oh boy. I was looking at those netbooks. Oh, the keyboard was the worst part, right?
Because it's always the worst part.
So keep your keyboard wider. You don't want a keyboard as wide as that iPad mini. You don't. You just don't. So I was looking at the dimensions in the tech specs for the iPad mini, and I realized that it's almost identical to the dimensions, not in thickness, it's thicker, but almost identical in dimensions to this Android-based e-reader that I've been trying. And that made me laugh, because what the Android reader has going for it is that it's got an e-ink display, right? So sure. You can, you know, and it's super weird. I'm going to write about it at some point. It's got some really janky aspects to it, but it's also got some really nice aspects to it. And the fact that it's sort of like a Kindle, but I can launch an RSS reader or individual like apps that have that I pay for content in, newspapers or websites that have apps, and I can read them, and it's an e-ink reading experience. It's kind of nice. It's kind of janky, but it's nice in a way. And the iPad mini doesn't have the e-ink, right? It's just an iPad. At the same time, it's the same size, and it will literally do anything that an iPad can do.
Right.
And
sure.
Yeah, that's like my Kindle or my Kobo. Those are both much smaller, and they have the e-ink, and it is really great for reading books and stuff. But I could see that for a lot of people, like, this iPad mini is going to be the, like, it's perfect for that, because it gives you, you know, it gives you the entire iPad experience as much as, or as little as you want, right? It's got the A15 in it, so if you want to edit podcasts on it or whatever, you could do that too. But like, as an e-reader, I think the people who have championed the iPad mini as an e-reader, that when they get their hands on this, they're going to be impressed, because it seems to be like the old one, even, but, you know, even more so, even better. And that's pretty great.
It makes, well, two things to note. One, you know, Apple once again reestablishes the fact that it's mini doesn't mean it's cheap or low end.
Oh,
it's
still
expensive, and it is very powerful. So
the
it's
price.
This isn't a cut rate iPad, like, right? It's $500.
The 500, you know, the base model too. You got to go up from that, and it's very easy to get that thing to be very expensive if you go up to the higher capacity. And you go to cellular, right? You can, it gets really expensive really fast.
Yeah, exactly. So that's something to consider. I know people, it's not the $329 iPad, right? It's a much more modern.
It's starts at $499, but that's a 64, right? Apple's cleared the 64 out of the phones, but mini starts at 64. Its only other configuration is 256, and that's $649. So if you don't consider 64 to be a reasonable amount of storage for an iPad, which if you're buying it as an e-reader or for a kid, maybe it's fine. But like if you look at the iPad mini and say, well, I want to take this thing seriously, well, then it doesn't start at $499. It starts at $649. Right.
And that same issue, interestingly enough, with the iPad Air, which also starts at 64 gigs, but starts at 600. So this is newer than the Air, right? Which is also a slightly awkward position. Like last year when the Air was introduced and had a better chip than the Pro until the Pro got revved. So Apple hasn't quite got its iPad ducks in a row. Well, they're still in a weird, like slightly staggered upgrade cycle.
I think Apple's feeling about these mid-range iPads, which is what the Air and the Mini are, right? There's the Pro up at the top, and there's the ninth generation iPad down at the bottom. Their strategy about the mid-range iPad seems to be that they think that there's maybe a bifurcated market here where they can get people to buy up from the ninth generation now.
Sure. Yep.
By having that entry price. But that if people want to treat it like a cheap Pro, it won't be so cheap. Like that,
right.
they seem to, there really are two iPad Airs and two iPad Minis. There's the bare bones model that's got a pretty good price. And then there's, if you want anything more, it's the, and tack $150 on it to start. And then also at that point, you need to also tack on the extra for cellular, which is an extra, 130, right? Classic. I think that's not a mistake. I think that Apple is sort of like, they really like that low price as a way to kind of tempt people up, but they don't want to make it so cheap that it's easy for people to go into it who really want to like soup it up like souping it up pushes it into iPad Pro price territory.
Yeah, right. And with the question then being, are you better off getting an iPad Pro? But I think that's, yeah, like you said, there's a strategy to it. In fact, this is touching on what my Macworld piece next week will be about, which is about the low end of Apple's strategy and how they utilize that. But it's one of the things that's kept me from upgrading my iPad at this point is like, I don't know. It's a struggle for me as somebody who's in the middle between, well, I don't use my iPad that much, do I need a Pro versus,
yeah,
well, if I'm going to buy an Air, it's, if I'm going to get to a point where I want it, so expensive, am I better off buying a Pro, right?
Yeah, well, like, I want to recommend an iPad Air to you because I know that feels like it's sort of about right for you, given your use of the iPad. The problem is the iPad Air you would buy...
it's still expensive.
Would be $749.
Right.
And at that point, and it would be $256, but at that point, you ought to spend $799 on the 128 iPad Pro.
Yeah, exactly. Why not spend $50? And that's where their strategy is a little complex. And I think if they were able to make these in such a way that they could adjust those price points a little bit, I think they would probably end up with a superior like spread. But I think that the Air is expensive because it had a lot of good technology in it. So I think they're struggling with trying to find that. Because right now, I mean, the classic iPad price point is like $500, right?
Yeah.
And right now, the only thing that comes in at that price is the Mini. And it's good for what it is,
it's the 64
gigs. Yeah. So it's the price point has shifted up. I imagine it will shift down again as this transition gets... you know, put to the point where they can produce it in better scale and they've had a few years at it, but it's going to be a couple of years.
Yeah. Or maybe what will really happen is that they'll keep the price point the same, but it will end up starting at 128 instead of 64,
right.
which is what they did with the phones. And they do like to do that. They like to hold their price points. I won the draft for upgrade. Spoilers for upgrade. I won the draft on that they held their base price points. And, you know, they like to hold those points and release new products in, but they did update the storage. And so that may happen on the iPad too. I don't know. That's how they get you, Dan. In the end, this is how they get you. This is how
they make all the house always gets its cuts, Jason.
That's right. That's right. Always bet on black. No, sorry.
Yeah, that's
Wesley Snipes. And I think, yeah, he went to jail. So it's not so good. Don't listen. Don't take financial advice from Wesley Snipes is what I'm saying.
That's a small text.
All right. Big week. Lots of stuff to talk about. Going to be more next week, right? Because products are going to release and all of that. So
iOS 15.
We
too.
Shall. Yeah, iOS 15, iPadOS 15, iPhones and iPads shipping. Oh, mass hysteria. So we'll be back to cover all of that, of course, or at least some of it, what we can, next week. But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.